Welcome to the Natural Allergy Treatment Podcast. I'm your host, Jess, and joining me today is Jenny, our PAT expert naturopath based in Auckland, New Zealand. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Jess.
We're part of Health and Wellness Australia in Auckland, who are a team of naturopaths around Australia and New Zealand that specialise in a natural allergy treatment called Positive Association Technique, or PAT. So in this episode, we're going to be talking all about asthma, specifically allergic asthma. And we've been seeing quite a few clients struggling with asthma this winter. So Jenny will be talking us through the different types of asthma, common triggers, and how PAT can be beneficial as part of a holistic approach for managing allergic asthma.
Yeah, so asthma reactions are really a big deal. They're becoming more and more common. So at present, there's about 500,000 New Zealanders and 2.5 million Australians that have been diagnosed with it. So that's 1 in 8 adults and 1 in 7 children. And it's also the most common reason for hospital admissions in children. And in 90% of the children and in 50% of the adults, this condition is classified as allergic asthma.
So let's start off with what exactly is asthma?
So asthma is a chronic inflammatory disorder of the lungs. So this causes narrow, swollen airways, increases mucus, shortness of breath, chest tightening, coughing, and wheezing. And so during an asthma attack, the spasms in the muscles surrounding the bronchi, which is the small airways in the lungs, constrict, and that disrupts this outward passage of air. So an attack can last for a few minutes or several hours. So asthmatic lungs are sensitive and they overreact to stimuli, which is usually harmless to others, such as allergens like pollen and dust or air pollutions like smoke and chlorine. And they can even be triggered by strong emotions or even changes in temperature and humidity. So for asthma sufferers, winter can also make their symptoms worse because of this cold, dry air that they are inhaling, because it irritates their airways and can increase mucus that occurs, you know, during the winter time. So also, asthma isn't always a chronic condition. So you can get acute flare-ups from upper respiratory tract infections, exercising in cold air, and exposure to airborne allergens like mold or pollen.
And like you said, there's two different types of asthma. There's allergic and non-allergic. Could you explain the difference between the two?
Sure. So allergic asthma is caused by an allergy to a particular substance like food. Non-allergic is caused by an allergy but may be triggered by other factors. So intrinsic or viral-induced asthma can happen when there's an infection of the airways. So like a heavy cold or a flu can cause asthma to happen for the first time. So when the body faces a viral infection, the body sends an inflammatory response to attack and defend. So this can cause swelling and increased sensitivity of the airway cells, as well as excess mucus production. So post-infection, your symptoms should dissipate, but you can be more susceptible to getting it again if you get another respiratory illness. And, you know, for people who have had COVID, like, this, you know, the persisting COVID symptoms, they're also really common in people with asthma, because COVID and the immune response that it triggers can damage the walls and the lining of the alveoli and the capillaries in the lungs. And so that's why long-term lung damage occurs in some people even after this acute illness is over. So they did a study published in 2022 that suggested that patients with asthma post-COVID had worsening of asthma control after they recovered from COVID. So COVID can affect this lung health and function even if you were previously healthy, which is, you know, a really big problem now. It's also worth mentioning that cardiac asthma is a condition that causes the same symptoms as other type of asthma, but can actually be caused by heart failure. So this is a really important reason why you need to go to a doctor and explain your symptoms, because asthma can also resemble other diseases such as emphysema, bronchitis, lower respiratory infections, and exercise-induced laryngeal obstruction. The other kind, this allergic asthma or this extrinsic type asthma, is when the allergen exposure can temporarily increase the inflammation of your airways, which is making you more susceptible to an attack. So when these substances are inhaled, the body can perceive them as being a danger to the immune system and cause an allergic reaction. So your airways might constrict, or you might produce more mucus, and they can become red and swollen. So this can cause you to experience chest tightness, shortness of breath, wheezing, and coughing. So 2/3 of asthma asthmatics have been found to have environmental allergies, especially from irritation from mold spores, both inside and outside the home, which is generally worse during these winter months. But you also may find that there's reactions to certain foods as well.
So what are these some of the common airborne asthma triggers?
So the most common airborne reactions include mold, dust and dust mites, pollen, pet dander, and interestingly, cockroaches. So firstly, a study done with 181 patients with asthma were tested for mold allergies, and 76% of the patients with severe asthma tested positive for at least one mold allergy, and 50% tested positive for multiple mold allergies.
So you actually did a blog post all about mold. So I'll pop a link to that in the show notes as well.
Yeah. So next is dust mites. And so they are a significant indoor allergy trigger and are present in nearly every home, despite how clean you are. They're microscopic and they feed on dead skin cells and produce allergens that can considerably impact sufferers that are prone to allergic asthma. Another study found that 85% of people with asthma were allergic to house dust and mites. Pollen is also a major trigger, especially during springtime. About 80% of people with asthma also experience hay fever symptoms from these airborne triggers. And the last one may not be on your radar as a trigger for asthma, but they can cause allergic reactions to people who are sensitive. And so the allergens produced by cockroaches are concentrated in their fecal matter and their saliva and in fragments of their body parts. So on inhalation, the proteins present, they can inflame and constrict the airways, leading to asthma symptoms. So these tiny particles form dust and can become airborne, contaminating your home. So they're in the highest amounts in your kitchen, but the most common way to inhale cockroach allergen is to breathe in dust that's actually collected on pillows, bedding, or other kind of dust-trapping fabrics. And also there's a type of bacteria called Staphylococcus aureus, which can cause upper respiratory infections, and that's carried by the cockroaches themselves.
And just in case we needed another reason to be grossed out by cockroaches, right? Like anyone who lives in Sydney as well definitely has a traumatic cockroach story. So, and do they also contribute to nocturnal asthma?
Yeah, so reactions to dust mites, mold, and cockroaches, and animal dander can also trigger nocturnal asthma. So when you lie down in your bed, you could be inhaling these substances, and after a few hours, develop allergic asthma symptoms. So the worst time is like 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning when there's this natural decrease in circulating corticosteroids and ephenamine substances in your body that can trigger this coughing. So, you know, you can wake up just sneezy, coughy. Can be a big problem.
And I guess this is really relevant for people who also sleep with their pets. An interesting fact about reactions to pets is that most of us are actually reacting to the allergenic proteins from the pet's dander, sebum, and saliva on the fur rather than the actual shed fur itself. So while these hyperallergenic dogs do shed less of these allergens, they can still contribute to symptoms as well. So not only can these airborne triggers cause issues when we inhale them, but which foods can also trigger asthma symptoms?
Yeah, so there's a number of foods that can trigger asthma, and it does depend on the individual, as well as there's food additives and some naturally occurring chemicals. So we'll go into those ones later. But dairy products is the biggest. So it's the most common food allergy sensitivity that can trigger an attack. It's been shown to trigger asthma symptoms in up to 80% of children who are allergic to it. So dairy contains this protein, casein, which can be inflammatory for some people. It also is mucus forming, so it can exacerbate that clogging up of the lungs. And when more mucus accumulates in the lungs, there can be expelled asthma attacks can kind of develop. And so it's not just milk. There's cheese, yogurt, cream, butter, sour cream, and ice cream. Like all of those dairy products can cause a problem. Eggs are another one. So when they're eaten, and some people, they might produce these antibodies to the egg proteins. And these antibodies can cause symptoms like wheezing and difficulty breathing. Shellfish can be another trigger for asthma attacks. They contain high levels of histamine, which can cause inflammation of the airways, and sulfites are often added to prevent the shellfish discoloring. Another side to that is the shell of crayfish it's got chitin in it, and chitin is also in the shell of the dust mites. And so there is this connection between the two, just from the if you're inhaling broken up bits of dead dust mite shell. Fish can also be a trigger for asthma because it contains a type of protein called pyrrolobium, which is known to cause allergies in some people and can cause an attack. Peanuts. So this is a biggie again. Peanut allergies have been thought to come about from the unusual way that they're grown. So it flowers above the ground, but its seed-containing pods grow underground. So this exposes the growing pods to like soil-borne pathogens and pests that can also create openings for opportunistic fungi like Aspergillus to kind of infiltrate the pod. So because of this predation, the seed protein has evolved to act as a part of the plant's defense system. So when interacting with the pathogens, the proteins kind of modify and damage the cell membranes, and they interact with the immune receptors and modulate these signal pathways. So when some people ingest or even inhale these proteins, we can get an immune response, which occurs with the production of a specific IgE, leading to various symptoms depending on the person's sensitivity. Then there's also wheat. So celiac disease is an autoimmune disease caused directly by eating gluten. It is also a chronic inflammatory condition that doesn't just affect your guts. So inflammation can occur all over the body, and gluten also triggers this cascade of events that can lead to the release of leukotrienes, which are inflammatory molecules produced by the immune system, which can also be released during these asthma attacks. And so they can cause wheezing, coughing, and shortness of the breath. And children with celiac disease have 2 times higher risk of developing asthma. And interestingly, there's this thing called Baker's asthma, which dates back to the 1700s, where bakers were exposed to large amounts of flour dust and they suffered respiratory systems that mimicked asthma. It has later been discovered that it has an IgE response, which is an acute antibody produced by the body's immune system, which causes this release of histamine. So histamine can cause this shortness of breath and wheezing and coughing and other allergy symptoms.
And what about some of the food additives that you mentioned earlier?
Yeah, so some food additives have been known to cause attacks, especially the artificial colours tartrazine, which is like an orange colour, sunset yellow, amaranth, which is red, and cocaine, which is red. This blue, and then the food preservatives, the benzoates, MSG, and specifically the sulfites. So sulfites are naturally occurring in some foods, but they're also widely used as a food additive to preserve colour and prevent food spoilage. So they're most often found in soft drinks, cordials, and dried fruit, and wine, and fermented foods. Almost all processed foods, including potato and corn chips, and other processed meats like sausages and hamburgers. And so they're basically everywhere. So the numbers for that are 220 to 224 and 226. To 228. They did a study on apricots, because dried apricots are one of them, like a really simple thing that parents give their kids. And they tested the sulfite amounts, and they were 2 to 3 times higher than the recommended amount that they should actually be. So it's a really big trigger for some kids. And it's estimated that between 5 to 10% people with asthma have adverse reactions to eating foods that contain sulfites. And it might be something that you don't even know, you haven't registered. There's also this other thing that can happen, which is a reflex contraction of the airways that happens when you inhale the sulfites, which can explain this like a rapid onset of symptoms when you drink liquids like beer or wine, or when so the sulfur dioxide is inhaled during the swallowing process. So there's no clear understanding of why inhaled sulfites trigger this to happen, but it is speculated that it forms like a sulfur dioxide within the airways, and it affects the airway mucosa and activates an allergic antibodies, the IgE, and this bronchoconstriction. There is also some asthma medications, isoflurane and isoflurane, I'm not saying that correctly. They also contain sulfites in a sufficient dosage to actually trigger bronchospasm in some patients with asthma. So if you have an inhaler and you know that you do react to sulfites, it's good to just check the back to see if there is any sulfites in your actual inhaler, just to maybe switch if there is.
And what about when it comes to the naturally occurring food chemicals in some foods?
So the main food chemical that's been found to trigger asthma is salicylates. So salicylates are a family of food chemicals that occur naturally in plants, but which can trigger reactions in asthmatics. They sort of act as a natural pesticide and their protection from the plants against insects, fungi, and bacteria. So they're present in lots of the good foods. So they're in fruits, especially if it's unripe. It's mainly in the skin. There's vegetables, nuts, spices, herbs, jams, honey, tea, coffee, yeast extracts, beer, wine, natural flavorings. You know, so they also they're in a lot of things, but they're also created synthetically, and they can be found in perfumes, cleaning products, washing powders, botanical oils, medications. So what happens is the salicylates can accumulate. They can build in the body and have a cumulative effect over time. And then this reaction will sort of happen when you get to that point where you air out your threshold, or like your bucket's full. We talk about this quite a bit in the podcast about how, you know, you get this load of your symptom pictures and you get to this point where you go into a reaction mode. Aspirin induced asthma is actually due to the type of salicylate that's in it, called salicylic acid. And it's not just in aspirin, it's in the NSAIDs and the beta blockers. And so they can trigger asthmatic symptoms from sort of an overproduction of pro-inflammatory leukotrienes. And then there's also the good old MSG, which causes asthma for some people. We've done a podcast on salicylates and MSG if you want to listen and find out more about those ones.
Yeah, I'll pop the show notes with the blog we did about salicylate sensitivity and the sulfation pathway, as well as that MSG one as well. So now that we've got a good understanding of the various allergic asthma triggers, how can PAT be beneficial for someone struggling with asthma as part of a holistic approach?
Sure. So PAT can be beneficial by helping to relieve your symptoms to your individual triggers, so to help reduce the severity of the symptoms and the frequency of your flare-ups. So we're all qualified naturopaths, and we use a form of muscle testing or kinesiology to assess your reactions to a wide range of food, airborne and chemical substances, because everyone's triggers are individual. So how the muscle testing works is that you hold onto a sample vial of the substance, and we're looking for a change in your muscle strength to indicate a reaction. So if the muscle in your arm stays strong, then that shows that your body's okay with it. But if your muscle weakens, then it indicates a reaction to the substance. And so then we use this chiropractic tool called an AccuStim to stimulate the nerve bundles and acupressure points down either side of the spine. And so while you're holding onto that sample, it helps to retrain your body to no longer have a negative reaction to the substance.
So if you're interested in learning more about positive association technique, I'll also pop a link to our previous podcast episode called What is PAT? And you can also visit our website, which is naturalallergytreatment.com.au, where we have loads of information about the treatments. And what are some of the other tips that you'd give to someone struggling with asthma as part of this holistic approach?
Yeah, so asthma is an inflammatory condition in which many cells and cellular elements play a role. So in particular, mast cells, the eosinophils and the T lymphocytes, the neutrophils and the epithelial cells, they're all kind of involved in these allergic reactions and the immune system. So reducing inflammation and keeping the immune system strong are really important factors in reducing the frequency of these asthma attacks. So there are many beneficial vitamins and minerals, but it's best to follow the guidance of a qualified naturopath who's completed a holistic assessment of all your symptoms and everything else that's kind of going on. But also be aware that strong emotions and anxiety and stress can flare up your asthma symptoms. This is because stress causes a surge of the stress hormones that causes our body to become tense and increases our heart rate, which makes our breathing become shallow and fast. And this can change in the breathing pattern can trigger a flare up.
So talking about breathing patterns, can Buteyko breathing technique also be beneficial for some people?
Yeah, so Buteyko is a really successful program that teaches you how to control your symptoms through breathing techniques. So there's a lot of practitioners around Australia, and we've worked closely with Jana Kremitz from Functional Breathing and Education. She's located on the Gold Coast, but she also works online via telehealth. And then there's also Glenn White, who has a big clinic here in Auckland, for those of you in New Zealand. So cardiovascular exercise can also improve your asthma and immune system, as it helps to stretch out the lungs and the bronchial tubes, which reduces that resistance in breathing. It also boosts your immune system, so your asthma is less likely to be triggered by coughs and colds. And another beneficial thing it does is release those feel-good chemicals in your brain to lift your mood. So studies have shown that if you're stressed or depressed, you're at a higher risk of asthmatic symptoms.
And what about those who struggle with exercise-induced asthma?
Yeah, so people with chronic asthma usually experience symptoms of asthma during exercise, but there are many people who develop symptoms only during exercise. It's most common when running during the winter when that air is colder and drier. And this happens because normal breathing, when we breathe normally, we breathe air in through our nose, which is then first kind of warmed and moistened by the nasal passages. But when we're exercising, most of us breathe through our mouths. So we inhale this colder, drier air. And so the muscle bands around the airways are sensitive to these changes in temperature and humidity and react by contracting, which narrows the airway. So the symptoms usually start 5 to 20 minutes after the start of exercise or 5 to 10 minutes after brief exercise has stopped.
Now, I know that you're an avid runner, Jenny, and run clubs and park runs are definitely having a bit of a moment over here. So just before we wrap things up for today, do you have any specific tips for runners?
Yes, definitely. Well, one of the big ones is first warm up properly. So the British Journal of Sports Medicine, they studied what kind of warm up works best. And these are their recommendations. So the warm up should be 20 to 30 minutes long. So start with like a gentle jog and then increase the pace, including sort of several bursts of like 80 to 90% maximum capacity, lasting for about 2 to 5 minutes. So it's enough to kind of get small bronchospasm without sapping your energy. So this is actually how the elite athletes warm up, which is why even ones with asthma can still compete. So, you know, we've got the Olympics on at the moment. And at the London Olympics, there were 700 athletes with confirmed asthma diagnosis. So it definitely doesn't stop you being an elite athlete. You just got to work with it. Also, another way is to cover your face. So we were talking before how you're breathing in this cold air through your mouth, and that's going to create that bronchospasm. So if you cover your mouth and nose while you're running, that you're actually the moist air that you're exhaling will kind of humidify the air that you inhale. So it's sort of warming it up. And then take room temperature water with you. So if you're thirsty, your throat can get dry and trigger an attack. And if the water's too cold, it can actually make the airways contract, causing the bronchospasm. So just make sure it's not been in the fridge. But also lastly, especially if you're out somewhere in the middle of it, like a trail somewhere, just carry a rescue inhaler with you, because it can be life-threatening. So if you're in the middle of nowhere, you need to have something on hand that will actually relieve your symptoms if you get caught out.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for today, Jenny, and hopefully our listeners have gained a good understanding of the different types of asthma, common asthma triggers, and how PAT can be beneficial. So once again, if you want to learn more about positive association technique, visit our website, naturalallergytreatment.com.au, as we have lots of great resources there, and just get in touch to find out if it's right for you. I'll pop the link to all those previous blogs and podcasts that we mentioned. There were quite a few there today. Otherwise, I'm really looking forward to your next piece, Jenny, which is going to be all about dairy.
Yeah, it's a big one. It's going to be really interesting if you have a dairy sensitivity or reaction. Like it can affect so many different parts of your body. Make sure that you subscribe so that you can listen out for it.
Perfect. All right, exactly. I'll speak soon, Jenny.
Great. Thanks. Bye.